I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Friday, March 23rd, 2018. Let the record reflect that the time is 3:30 p.m. Committee members present today, Kevin. Senator Meyer, Senator Stedman, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Coghill, Senator Willikowski, and myself, Senator Giesel. I believe that Senator Bishop will be along. Oh, here he is as we speak. Welcome, Senator Bishop. Thanks to Chris and Max, who are helping us out today, keeping the minutes and helping us with the audio. Today, the committee has two items on the agenda. We're going to take up Senate Bill 176 related to bonding for tax credits, and after that, we'll be hearing House Bill 105 for the first time, sponsored by Representative Josephson, related to a proposed buffer zone around Denali Park. So on to our first item, which is Senate Bill 176. Sponsored by Rules, the Rules Committee at the request of the Governor. It was first heard on February 21st. So at this time, I am going to take up public testimony on Senate Bill 176. And I see one person signed up to testify electronically. Brandon Brzezinski is in the off-net in Anchorage. Mr. Brzezinski, welcome to the committee. If you would introduce yourself and give us your testimony, and if you would please limit your remarks to 2 minutes. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today on Senate Bill 176. So for the record, my name is Brandon Brzezinski, and I'm the External Affairs Manager for the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, commonly referred to as AOGA. AOGA is a private trade association that represents the majority of the oil and gas producers, explorers, refiners, and transporters of Alaska's oil and gas. And the following testimony reflects the opinion of our membership. AOGA supports an expedited resolution this year to refund the earned credits. Companies have earned these credits by investing hundreds of millions of dollars to hire Alaskans for the exploration and production of oil. The delay in the rebates has damaged the state's reputation and chilled future investment. It's caused projects to be shelved, resulting in negative economic impacts to the state and local communities, and now many of Alaskans are out of work, especially within the oil and gas industry. AOGA believes the state should honor all outstanding earned credits in full and in as expedited process as possible. The governor's bill is an innovative approach and seeks to refund a portion of the earned credits via bonding to raise money and then refunding the credits at a reduced rate. The governor proposes to lower the refunding rate to cover the state's bond finance costs. AOGA does have concerns about the steep discount rates and some other provisions in this bill, but AOGA is committed to working with the administration and legislature to find an equitable solution. It's simply too important. AOGA does applaud the administration for acknowledging that refunding these payments this year is a critical step forward. AOGA supports an equitable plan that will refund the entirety of the earned credits this year. So let's send a strong message to investors that signals Alaska's open for business and attracts the much-needed new investment to employ Alaskans, produce more oil, and drive forward Alaska's economy. With that, Madam Chair, concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brzezinski, for your testimony. And the committee is open to accepting your remarks in writing if you decide to also submit them that way. I'm looking online, and I'm not seeing anyone else wishing to testify online. Is there anyone here in the room that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 176? Seeing none, I will close public testimony. With that, the bill comes back before the committee for discussion. I've had no indication of amendments being offered. Is there further discussion by committee members? Seeing none, Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that Senate Bill 176, Work Order 30-GS2863-Alpha, move from committee with individual recommendations in the attached fiscal notes.
Is there objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 176 will move from this committee on to the next, which is the Finance Committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the transmittal document. We're back on the record. So the next item on the agenda is House Bill 105. This is sponsored by Representative Josephson. He is represented here today by his staff, Tom Atkinson. So welcome, Tom. I will just give the floor over to you. You can take us through your PowerPoint. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Tom Atkinson. I'm Chief of Staff for Representative Andy Josephson, who's on the floor in the other body, trying not to miss votes on his constitutional duty. So this House Bill 105 is not a complex bill. It would close areas that have been closed before by the Board of Game. Violation of the closure must be negligent to be actionable. We use the word negligently in subsection C, which you'll see on page 2, because that's the standard throughout other fish and game statutes. Negligently is provable and enforceable, whereas intentionally would be hard to prove. But I get ahead of myself. Let's go through the PowerPoint. You can see that there's a wolf sighting index. Our source there is the National Park Service. The sightings have declined rapidly, dramatically over this decade. And wolf sightings are a major tourist draw to the area. The Board of Game established a buffer zone at Denali's eastern boundary in 2010, which existed for 10 years, during which time there were more sightings. In 2014, less than 6% of the park visitors were able to see wolves. That's a decrease from 45% of park visitors who were able to see wolves in the last year of the Board of Game imposed closure. Wolf populations in Denali have declined from 116 in spring of 2006 to 50 in the spring of 2014.
Any questions on slide 2, Senator Bishop?
I do. who's doing the counts?
The
wolf counts?
Yes, Senator Bishop, through the chair, that's the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Okay, so it's just them and them alone, not Park Service isn't involved with any of the wolf counts.
Senator Bishop, through the chair, I'm uncomfortable giving you a definitive. The figures that I have are from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. It's my understanding that that's where the counts come from.
Thank you.
Any other questions on slide 2? Seeing none.
Thank you. This is new information that we received yesterday. There's five collared wolves, radio collared wolves from the Denali packs have been killed outside the park so far this winter. The Riley Creek male harvested in the Stampede Corridor. The Stampede Corridor is one of the proposed closure areas. And there'll be a map later in the PowerPoint. And there's probably, you'll have seen that map in your packet, too, that shows the Stampede Corridor. You're probably familiar with it. The collar was destroyed. This wolf was commonly seen along the park road and had a role in 2017's higher viewing rate. Two wolves from the Combe Pack were harvested in the Stampede Corridor. One wolf from Eagle Creek Pack harvested in the Nanana Canyon, which is the other part, the other geographical area that the bill proposes to close to taking of wolves. And one dispersed wolf from the Iron Creek Pack harvested near Delta.
Mr. Atkinson, what does dispersed wolf mean?
I believe that, Madam Chair, I believe dispersed wolf means no longer with the pack.
Gotcha. Any other questions on slide 3? Yes, Senator Coghill.
Just on harvested, my guess is harvested could be anywhere from shooting to trapping, and that is done by somebody that is known to report.
Senator Coghill, through the chair, yes. Any method of take, shooting, trapping, could conceivably be done with a bow and arrow, although I think that would be difficult. And, yes, this would be through reports.
Okay. The reason I'm asking, Madam Chair, is...
Yes, Senator Coghill.
All the listed ones of harvest, and it says that one of the collared wolves was killed. And so I was just wondering if that was like an automobile running over it. I've seen wolves that are hit by cars. So I just wanted to know if there was a distinction, that's all.
Thank you. Mr. Atkinson?
Senator Coghill, through the chair. That's good. A good point, I suppose. Any, per this, have been killed doesn't necessarily mean by someone who was intending to kill. The reason that Representative Josephson proposed this bill is an economic reason, because there's an economic benefit to the state from wildlife viewing. The source here is U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I believe you have the full report in your packet, the economic value of wildlife viewing. Total direct expenditures by wildlife viewers in the U.S. were $54.9 billion in 2011. That's obviously not very current information, but that's the latest we have. And I won't necessarily read this all to you. I think you can see it.
Any questions on this slide? All right, seeing none.
More on the economic impact here broken out for you in Alaska. Expenditures of, in 2011, $2 billion, $58 million, or closer to $59 million, with a multiplier effect, 40,000 plus jobs, $1.5 billion in wages and salaries, some state and local tax revenues, and even more federal tax revenues. We are in the top 10 ranks, states ranked by economic output for wildlife viewing.
Yes, Senator Von Imhoff had a question.
Thank you. So this is clearly aggregate for the entire state of Alaska, which means that this could be a lot of cruise ship passengers looking at sea otters in southeast Alaska, among others.
Senator Von Imhoff, through the chair, indeed, it could be. It is aggregate. Yes.
Any other questions on this slide?
Madam Chair, if I could follow up on Senator Von Imhoff's question, though, we do know that a great many of Alaska visitors from outside Alaska do have on their to-see list when they come to Alaska, Denali National Park and Preserve. And a lot of times, they want to see wildlife. So,
follow-up, Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. I mean, I'm assuming that there are numbers that show who goes into the Denali Park. I believe that the road is controlled to a certain degree. So I'm guessing that we could peel apart numbers of, I wouldn't call them passengers, I'll call them visitors to the park. You're focusing a lot on the economic value, which I can understand, but, you know, there are a lot of wildlife. We have bear, we have wolverine, we have lynx, we have moose, among other things. You mentioned just now people want to see wolves. I mean, is there a checklist that says which animals would you like to see or not see?
Senator Von Imhoff, through the chair, yes, that's my understanding, is that's what people tell the National Park Service when they go to the Denali National Park and Preserve, is that they want to see wolves.
Okay.
But I would be happy to follow up on that for you, because okay. I would hate to be a misstate.
Senator Von Imhoff, follow up.
If there is such a checklist, it would just be interesting to note. I mean, that's key pieces of information, especially since tourism is gaining. It's one of our bright spots in the state.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions on that slide. So moving on to slide that's numbered 5. Yes, Mr. Atkinson.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. I'm slide 6. Oh, I understand
yes,
what happened.
Yes, because you had inserted
it. I changed
yes.
it up on you.
But the public has what we posted online, which I believe it will be slide number 5. It calls it the buffer zone.
Indeed.
For folks listening.
Okay, the buffer zone. To protect wolves for future Alaskans and visitors, if I could just... That means visitors from outside Alaska. There's a lot of Alaskans who go to the Denali National Park and Preserve also. HB 105 would prohibit wolf hunting and trapping in two areas adjacent to the park and preserve. One is the wolf townships, which you'll see. I'll show you in the next slide a better map, but it's that little piece in the northeast corner where of state land that sort of juts to the west into the park and preserve. And then the Nenana Canyon is on the other side of the highway running north-south.
See, no questions on that one.
And here's your better map.
Okay, on slide 6 for the public who are following along.
There is a distinction between the bill does not propose to close the area south of Cantwell.
So that cross-hatched section is not intended to be part of the bill?
The cross-hatched section, Madam Chair, that's below, that's south of Cantwell.
Thank you.
Correct.
Any other questions on this map? Yes, Senator Coghill.
Just wondering, the actual downtown Healy is in this, is that what I understand? Is it along the road that an overlaps Healy?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, yes, I believe actual downtown Healy is within, yes.
I don't understand anything I know about the law, but it looks to me like that could be problematic for public safety, and so I would just, I'm reserving that comment as we move along.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. It also looks like, it's difficult to tell on the map. I see the sign, the indication for Cantwell. Is Cantwell also encompassed by the proposed area, or is it south of that blue area?
Madam Chair, it's not encompassed by the proposed area.
Thank you. Any other questions on the map that's on slide 6? Seeing none.
We did get... receive a resolution of support from the Fairbanks North Star Borough. On this right-hand side of this slide, there's just a portion of the buffer zone proposed by the National Park Service, proposed to the Board of Game. There were two proposals to the Board of Game in 2017 for closures, one from the National Park Service, which was not approved. But we included this because it shows the utilization by wolves of the area. So you can see the through the red or umber or shading where most of the wolves are.
Thank you. Senator Coghill.
Sure. I appreciate this. So the wolf density probably has a lot to do with animals they would prey on. So moose, some caribou up in that neck of the woods. So the density probably should be counted on both sides, both the prey and the wolf itself. And so have you teased those numbers out? How many? Because there some animals are very cyclical, like hares. The wolf population would depend upon hares because they're easy catch. But they would also depend upon moose and any other ungulate. And so have you compared the population or sightings with the other sightings of the other animals?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, no, I have not. However, we do have as invited witnesses two biologists who I hope you could pose that question to them. They'll be much more knowledgeable than I on this.
That might have, I'm hoping that it has some to do with the density of population and the sighting of population. We'll see.
Any other questions? Let's see, this is slide 7 we're looking at. Any other questions? All right, seeing none.
This is, if you will, a sectional analysis, even though there's only one section in the bill. It's as I indicated at the top, it's a simple bill. So it prohibits the taking of wolves and the use of certain traps and snares in these specific areas adjacent to DNPP. A person may not take a wolf or use a cable snare with a diameter greater than 3/32 or a leg hold trap with a jaw spread greater than 5 inches within the boundaries described. That's very specific, you'll note, and that we arrived at that in consultation with ADF&G biologists who told us what trappers typically use for taking wolves as opposed to taking other animals. And they would typically not use traps larger of this size or larger for taking smaller animals. They would typically use the larger traps for taking the larger canine. Nothing in this section, of course, could be construed to prevent the department from taking or authorizing the taking of wolves that present a danger to the health or safety of local residents, which might address Senator Coghill's concern about Healy, although I wouldn't want to state definitively that it does. A person who negligently, there's the word I addressed at the beginning, violates A of this section is guilty of a Class A misdemeanor.
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. Do you know how long it takes for the wolf to die when it's caught in a cable snare or a leg hold trap?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I don't, sir. However, as I mentioned to Senator Coghill just now, we do have some expert testimony lined up, and they can probably tell you. I don't think it's necessarily immediate.
Yes, the sponsor has given me 4 names of invited testimony, which we'll be hearing after this presentation. So any other questions on what is numbered slide 9 on this? All right, seeing none. And it looks like we're at the last slide.
We are, Madam Chair. Thank you. I just have a few more comments, if I might, before.
Absolutely.
So regarding subsistence, HB 105 wouldn't affect the 6-per-year federal quota within Denali National Park and Preserve. I believe that's a subsistence federal quota within the park and preserve. Also on the topic of subsistence, subunit 20A is much larger than the proposed closure area, so closing the wolf townships wouldn't necessarily reduce the subsistence opportunities elsewhere in that subunit. When the Board of Game closed the townships to wolf take between 2000 and 2010, no one challenged that closure based on subsistence. Unless there are questions for me, Madam Chair, I would give way to the experts.
Senator von Imhoff had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You had mentioned earlier what was the impetus of this bill. Who brought this to Representative Joseph's attention? I forgot what you said.
Senator von Imhoff, through the chair. Senator Josephson, Representative Josephson introduced this bill before I was working for him, and unfortunately I haven't discussed with him the history of that, so I don't think I can answer that question for you just now. Sorry.
Any other questions for Mr. Atkinson at this point? All right. Thank you very much. As I said, Representative Josephson has supplied the names of 4 invited testimony, so I'll just take them in the order that they appear here. Mr. Rick Steiner is first, and it looks like he might be on the off net, so on the phone. Mr. Steiner, can you hear us?
Madam Chair, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, very clearly. Thank you. So if you would introduce yourself, your name, and your affiliation for the record, and give us your testimony.
I'd be glad to. Thank you very much. I'm Rick Steiner. I was a professor at the University of Alaska for 30 years, stationed in the Arctic, and then Prince William Sound, and then in Anchorage. I'm now a conservation biology consultant in Anchorage. And I'd like to thank the chair and the committee for considering HB 105 today. We know you all have many difficult issues in front of you, but I would respectfully suggest that HB 105 is not one of those difficult issues. From my perspective, this should be an easy yes vote. For years, the Denali Wolf Buffer, as you know, has been entangled in this ideological dispute between those who object in principle to federal management, parks and refuges and Anilka and such, versus those who love parks and watchable wildlife and natural undisturbed ecosystems. But I'd just like to suggest that HB 105 is really not about any of that, and I would encourage the committee to try to disentangle its consideration of the bill from that ideological context and reframe it as simply what it truly is, and that's number one, what's best for the economy of Alaska, and number two, what's best for the majority of the people of Alaska. And through that simple lens, I think HB 105 would be a clear yes vote. There are a number of undisputed and very clear facts. One, Denali generates over $600 million a year in visitor spending. It is Alaska's most valuable tourism resource. And viewing of wildlife, as Tom said, is clearly one of the main reasons for such a visitation to Denali. Secondly, Denali has been the easiest place in Alaska for people to go see wolves in their natural habitat, and it used to be one of the best such places in the world, but it is not anymore, and due primarily, we believe, to state-permitted take along the boundary. Next, we are clear that park wolves cross the northeast boundary in winter and spring, following caribou primarily, and are taken by sport hunters and trappers, and on average, only four or five are taken each year across the boundary. But already this winter, as Thomas mentioned, five colored park wolves have been taken, and given that there's four times as many uncolored wolves in the park as colored, it's a virtual certainty that many more uncolored wolves were taken outside the park as well this season, and the season remains open until the end of April. Next, we're clear, science is clear that even a low-level take can cause a disproportionate impact on the Eastern Park wolf groups and thus visitor viewing success. An example, in 2012, the last pregnant female from the Grant Creek group was trapped. They did not have pups. They did not den. The group disintegrated, and visitor viewing success dropped by about half that following season. The same phenomenon occurred with the East Fork pack in 2015 and 2016. It's what scientists call the breeder loss effect. Essentially the take of one important breeding wolf along the boundary could cause a significant drop in the, or loss in the integrity of a group, dispersion, and the drop, and the consequent drop in visitor viewing success. The next fact is that wolf viewing success has declined from, as Tom mentioned, from 45% when the buffer existed to 4 to 6% for about a 4 or 5 year period, and then last year increased a little bit to 16%, fortunately, but it's still far below the 45% that we had with the buffer. And much of that visitor viewing success was from this one animal, the collared Riley Creek male, that was just killed this winter in the stampede. So thousands of visitors got to see that animal last summer, and now it's been taken by one person, and that alone could lead to a drop in visitor viewing success rate this summer. The next fact is in Yellowstone, a great comparison, wolf viewing success is generally between 45% to 85% of the visitors get to see wolves, and they have valued the wolf viewing economy there at an estimated $35 million a year. So it's pretty substantial when you have a pretty reliable chance of visitors seeing wolves in the park. And the science has shown very clearly, and I put that in my written testimony to you folks, that a small closed area along the northeast boundary, such as that proposed by this bill, will help protect the Eastern Park wolf groups, most seen by visitors. Not all the park packs, but just the ones seen by visitors in the Eastern Park, and that would correspondingly increase visitor viewing success and ultimately increase the wildlife viewing economy of the park. Next, the closed area would impact only a few local sport hunters and trappers who could then relocate their activities a few miles away, but it would benefit up to 70,000 or so Alaska citizens that visit the park annually and over a half a million out-of-state visitors, many of which want to see wolves in the wild. The closed area is broadly supported by Alaskans, we believe, the Fairbanks North Star Borough, many wildlife tourism advocacy organizations, several hundred thousand people signed an online petition, and countless other efforts to try to secure this buffer. And finally, on the facts, the benefit cost is clearly overwhelmingly in favor of the bill. At little or no cost, I'm sorry?
It was just someone coughing. Please proceed.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I'll be quick here and wrap this up. I apologize. So based on these facts alone, then the question becomes, what should state policy be? And clearly, a rational policy for a rational government would do everything it could to restore, sustain, and enhance this multi-million dollar economic resource. And HB 105 will certainly help with this by simply reallocating these few animals from being taken along the boundary of the park to remain alive for visitor viewing in the park. It's pretty straightforward. And finally, Madam Chair, I'd like, there's three issues we continually hear about this proposal. One, isn't 6 million acres in the park enough? In fact, 4 million acres at Denali are open to wolf take, and only 2 million are closed, and that's the wilderness area, the old McKinley Park, the core of the park. Secondly, that too much of Alaska is already closed to hunting and trapping. And in fact, less than 3% of Alaska is actually closed to wolf take. And that's basically the pre-Anoka parks of Denali, Katmai, and Glacier Bay. So 10 million acres are closed, 350 million acres are open. So the question should rather be, isn't 97% of Alaska and 350 million acres open to wolf hunting and trapping enough? And then finally, folks have said, well, isn't this just a gift to the feds or the Park Service? And in fact, no, it's a gift to the people and the economy of Alaska, plain and simple. And in closing, I'm confident that if the committee is able to consider this issue today solely through the lens of economics and public interest, for instance, what is the highest and best interest of the majority of Alaskans, you'll reach a yes vote to move the bill onto the floor. And again, in a rational world, to us, this isn't even a close call. It would be a clear yes. And I'll end there, and I'd be glad to entertain any questions you may have. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Steiner. Any questions for Mr. Steiner? Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Steiner, for your comments. What's the typical range for a pack of wolves in square miles?
That's a good question, and I would say it's up. It depends, but in areas around Denali, that could be 50 to 70 square miles. They can range fairly broadly.
Thank you.
Any further questions for Mr. Steiner? Seeing none. The next person on invited testimony offered by the sponsor of the bill is Nick Van Ballenberg. And he is, looks like, at the Anchorage LIO. Mr. Van Ballenberg?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am Vic Van Ballenberg. I live in Anchorage. I was appointed to the Alaska Board of Game 3 times, and I'm a wildlife biologist who has been a biologist here in Alaska since 1974. I think it's important to ask the basic question, why are we here? I submit that we are here because there is an important unresolved problem that has existed for decades. Namely, the state of Alaska has not provided a small number of wolves in Denali National Park with adequate protection from hunting and trapping when they travel outside the park. Lacking this protection when these wolves are shot or trapped, hundreds of thousands of park visitors are deprived of the opportunity to see and hear wolves, putting millions of dollars of tourism revenue at risk. This is not just a wildlife issue. It goes all the way to deciding what is in the best interest of the state of Alaska. The Alaska Board of Game has debated this issue numerous times since 1992, when the first protective buffer was adopted. Between 2000 and 2010, the board on 7 occasions took major actions to create buffers, modify their boundaries, or rescind them. Each time required a large amount of effort by the board, its support staff, the Department of Fish and Game, and the Department of Public Safety to provide the necessary input. And each time, hundreds of individuals provided written comments and oral testimony to the board. Numerous organizations representing hunters, trappers, and conservation organizations also provided input. I was on the board in 2002 when it created a protective buffer adjacent to the northeast corner of the park. Several times in previous years, wolf packs were severely reduced or eliminated in this area, by legal and illegal hunting and trapping. The board thoroughly debated this proposal, amended, and passed it. I know how much effort accompanied this action and how difficult it was to reach consensus, and I know that no less effort was required each of the other six times the board addressed this issue. Despite the best efforts of the board over time, the protected buffers were too small and wolves continued to be lost. In 2010, the National Park Service and several conservation organizations submitted proposals to the board to enlarge the buffers based on the best available data. Despite strong public support, the board not only rejected the proposals but rescinded the existing buffers. During the past 7 years, with no buffers in place, the problems have worsened, with sightings of wolves along the park's road dropping greatly. From 1980 to 2017, 37 years, I conducted wildlife research in Denali National Park. I kept records of wolf sightings along the park road in my study area. During those years when the wolf packs were not disrupted by hunting and trapping, I saw wolves near the road often, some years dozens of sightings. During years when the packs were disrupted, there were few, if any, sightings. I experienced these differences firsthand. Clearly, the Board of Game has demonstrated that it cannot and will not resolve this important issue. It is time to finally provide a lasting solution by moving from the game board arena to the legislature. HB 105 will accomplish that. I urge the committee members to endorse this bill, to advance it, and to support its passage. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on this important bill.
Thank you, Mr. Van Ballenberg. Any questions from committee members? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Next on invited testimony is Nancy Bale. Nancy is also calling in from the Anchorage area. Nancy, can you hear us? Be sure to unmute yourself, Nancy, if your phone is on mute.
Thank you. Can you hear me now?
Yes, very loud and clear. Welcome, Nancy. If you would give your name and affiliation and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Senator Giesel and members of the Senate Resources Committee, for considering this very important bill, HB 105. My name is Nancy Bale, and I've been resident of Alaska since 1971 and spent the first 20 or 30 years of my residency in Alaska as a resident of the Denali region. My husband and I got one of the last homesteads west of the park on the Tanzona River back in 72 after BLM stopped giving out land when the Native Claim Settlement Act began to select. And we developed that property. It's actually a home site, and spent time there in the winters and lived in the park and worked in the park in the Cantician area in summers for over 23 years. In 1996, I graduated from nursing school and moved into Anchorage. It was a pretty big change, but I've enjoyed being a nurse here in Anchorage. In 2000, I joined the board of the Denali Citizens Council. These were friends of mine and people I'd known over the years, and I was interested in the purposes of the group, and I'm testifying on behalf of the board and members of the Denali Citizens Council with my testimony here today. On behalf of the board and members of the DCC, a local public interest organization headquartered at the entrance to Denali National Park, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony. In the interest of our approximately 300 members, we ask that you pass HB 105. Many of our members are year-round local residents in Healy, McKinley Village, and Campbell, and others are seasonal employees who benefit from the opportunity to share the national park with roughly 500,000 visitors yearly. Others have visited Denali and joined DCC to show support for the park. DCC has been one of the organizations over the years that supported protection of Denali wolves when they venture onto state lands outside the park. We supported the board closures of these areas in 2002 and that continued on through 2010. And we have brought numerous proposals and initiatives before the Board of Game. I'm a veteran attendee at Board of Game meetings, and I know members of the local AC, which is the Middle Nenana River AC. One of our board members, Nan Eelson, is a member of that committee. The wolves that den in Denali National Park have been studied since the days of Adolf Murray. Beginning in the 1980s, radio collaring allowed scientists to learn much more about their pack structure, territories, and movements. The wolf program at Denali is unique in the state and has provided valuable data to the scientific community as well as learning experiences for park visitors. Through the Murray Science and Learning Center, park scientists are able to share the results of a lot of that information with park guests. So, yes, this science goes right to the visitors. In addition, Denali's wolf program has encouraged cooperation among both state and federal scientists from the ground level up to the administration. We Alaskans should be proud of this unique resource. One clear result of these studies has been to show that wolves who den in the park predictably visit certain areas of state lands at the northeast corner of the park, particularly in late winter and spring, but return to the park for denning and summer activities. Certainly, some of these wolves disperse entirely away, but from the radio location data conducted over decades, we know that many venture out and return. The maps have shown this. It is these wolves who are at greatest risk of death from trapping and hunting outside the park. Add to this the ease of highway access on these lands and the long hunting trapping seasons lasting from August 10th through May 31st in most areas, and in some areas through April 15th. And you see the risk is increased. Such risk, concentrated in these areas, is what has led to the development of this particular map. Although, as you've been told before in testimony, hunting and trapping of wolves can occur in the preserves and in the Anoka Park additions, which are 2 million acres north and 2 million acres south, and the preserves in the northwest and north and southwest, HB 105 is only asking for a no-kill area on these state lands northeast of the park, as this is where the human harvest risk is concentrated. We understand that the overall population of wolves in the area is not threatened. However, we also know that just a few deaths can be significant for both scientific study and visitor experience, as has been pointed out to you already in testimony. The Denali Citizens Council Board has a decades-long history of residing and working in the region. Some of our members live in a stampede corridor and along the Nenana Canyon, the area scheduled for closure. Many of us are hunters, and the council does not oppose hunting or trapping. We simply view the closure as a great benefit with a relatively small cost to consumptive uses. And just to let you know a little more about the blue area for closure, the area that's within the cutout or the stampede corner is in Game Management Unit 20C, and the Nenana Canyon area is in Game Management Unit 20A. And the very tip, the southern tip of that area is in Unit 13E. In these areas, hunting season lasts between August 10th and May 31st. It's closed on April 15th within the stampede cutout. The bag limit is 10 wolves per hunter. The trapping season goes from November 1st to April 30th, and the bag limit is unlimited. These liberal bag limits and hunting seasons and numbers and the unlimited trapping numbers create a great risk when time is right for certain wolves to be captured and to be unavailable for science and the enjoyment of visitors in the park. Please pass this bill out of committee. And again, thank you so much for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Vail. Are there any questions for Ms. Vail? Not seeing any. Thank you very much. Let's see, the fourth and last person who is designated as invited testimony is Joel Bennett, and he is here in the room. So I will welcome you to come forward, Mr. Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joel Bennett. I reside in Juneau, Alaska. My employment has been primarily in film and television, but I was an attorney for the Legislative Affairs Agency for 9 years here, specializing in natural resources law, including fish and game. I also served on the Alaska Board of Game for 13 years. I believe I was the second longest board member to date. In general, in my work, I've traveled extensively in Denali National Park, as well as in countless other remote areas of the state. As a resource user, I've been an active licensed hunter in the state every year since 1968. Over the years, there's been many efforts to reach agreement on what is best for wildlife and what is best for Alaska. Wolf management has always been a challenging and controversial subject, but the issue that HB 105 addresses should not be, and that's why I urge you to support it. In my view, as others have stated, HB 105 is not a hunting issue. It's an economic one. In certain limited areas of the state, the highest and best interest of wildlife is for tourism, and tourism is a huge economic driver. With Denali National Park one of the most popular national parks in the nation, including visitation by tens of thousands of Alaska residents a year, anything that adversely impacts one of the main things visitors come to see there should be minimized. The restrictions that HB 105 would impose, limited to wolves only, would likely result in more wolves for Denali National Park visitors to view, while only displacing a few hunters and trappers who have ample opportunities elsewhere. The Board of Game recognized this when on several occasions it created buffer areas for wolves in the very areas that HB 105 covers. After that, wolf viewing success in the park was high. Now, with no buffer areas, wolf viewing success is the lowest it's ever been. Passage of HB 105 could change this. When Jay Hammond first appointed me to the Board of Game in 1977, he encouraged me to do what's best for the resource, but also as a hunter and wildlife advocate, to look at both sides of an issue. He respected the values of different user groups, recognizing that some areas deserve special protection, and in some areas, hunting and trapping should be restricted. I believe that Jay Hammond, an early master guide and hunting defender, would have examined HB 105 on its merits, weighed the cost-benefit to the state, and seen the wisdom of protecting wolves in these two sensitive areas adjacent to Denali National Park. So I appeal to your good sense and to do the right thing in favoring this legislation. The bill has already passed the House. In the spirit of Jay Hammond, one of Alaska's most visionary public servants, I urge you to support HB 105. Thank you for giving me the time to share my views.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bennett, for your testimony. Are there any questions for Mr. Bennett? All right, seeing none, thank you. So that ends the invited testimony list. So now I'm going to open general public testimony, and I'm going to start here. So this is general public testimony now. I'm going to start here in the room. It looks like Ryan Harms is here to testify. For general public testimony, I typically limit testimony time to 2 minutes. You are Mr.
Ryan Harms. For the record, my name is Ryan Harms.
Welcome. If you would identify yourself for the record, the secretary will take your name down as you give it and your affiliation.
Certainly. For the record, welcome. My name is Ryan Harms. I'm currently a resident of Juneau. I came here today, pardon the casual attire. I didn't really intend to speak. I've been drawn to this issue simply because you're discussing an area where when I came to Alaska, I lived in Healy, specifically on the Stampede Corridor as part of the tourism industry. I was a bartender for several years. My sister and my brother-in-law are currently both teachers in the Tri-Valley School, which is Healy, live on the Stampede Corridor. This is an issue that's been discussed within my family for years. obviously I'm not an expert in the way that your previous testimonials have been, so take this with however grain of salt you must. I would like to offer a voice for the, I guess, the voice of the tourist that isn't here. In the years that I worked in Denali National Park primarily as a bartender and then later as a teacher in the area, it came very obvious to my attention, this is, I think, addresses Senator Von Imhoff, is that correct? Concerns about, is there a checklist of tourists' preferences? There's certainly not that I'm aware of, but in all the years that I've been there, without question, the returning tourists come back and always speak about what they saw in the park, whether it was bears, the doll sheep, wolves, etc., and they're always glowing when they say that they have seen wolves. And I've only seen one in the years that I've lived there. I lived there from 2004 through 2009, and then as recently as 2012, I lived in the Stampede Corridor, right off the beginning of the Stampede Trail. I've seen one wolf, and it was a very elated moment for me. I've seen many bears in the area. I've seen doll sheep everywhere, that sort of thing. But wolves are one of those animals that are almost majestic in the sense that they're, you don't see them. I believe the statistic earlier, if I had the PowerPoint in front of me, said fewer than 45% of visitors see them. I would count myself in that minority as having seen one, but once in 6.5 years of living there, that's a pretty low percentage. But without question, tourists love to see wolves. It is much more than the sea otter, not to belittle the idea of that example that you brought, but they are not equated in tourists' minds. Beyond that, I'd just like to say that there is undoubtedly tourist interest in seeing wolves in that area. As far as Senator Coghill's concern about public safety, if anything in the region of Healy, the only thing that I've seen is the unintended harming of, pardon me, I realize run over time, I'll be very brief, the unintended harming of domesticated animals in the area that are attracted to traps in the region. One of my sister's animals was actually caught in one of those traps. We were lucky enough to hear her whimpering, and we were able to get her out unharmed as a sled dog that they had. But that, in and of itself, is somewhat of an issue where the unintended consequences of domesticated animals are equally attracted to these wolf traps. It's not just wolves themselves. With that said, I'm not necessarily certain that I'm for or against the bill, but I thought I would offer the voice that hasn't been brought here, which is the private citizen and the potential tourist that have actually lived and worked in the area. Thank you, Madam Chairman and Committee, for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Harms. Let's see. With that, I will go to the phone lines. It looks like I'll take them in the order they signed in. Randall Zarnke is in Fairbanks. He's at the Fairbanks LIO. Mr. Zarnke, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, very clearly. Welcome to the committee, and if you would identify yourself, giving us your testimony.
My name is Randy Zarnke. I serve as the president of the Alaska Trappers Association, and I'm speaking today on behalf of our nearly 900 members. We are opposed to HB 105. We believe it's unnecessary. The population of wolves in the Denali area is abundant, and wildlife management is really based on population, not on the individual animals, as was discussed earlier. And as you all know, management of wildlife in Alaska is the responsibility of the game board, and I propose that we leave it to them. In our opinion, this bill is being promoted by people who are opposed to consumptive use, and it should be seen as such. If the proponents of this bill wish to really pursue it, we propose that they offer and work with their allies at the Park Service to offer state residents something in return. The idea that I've had for many years and have mentioned to many people is we would consider supporting a buffer zone if they were to allow us state residents to hunt sheep in Gates of the Arctic and Wrangells. So a trade of that nature would be something we would consider. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Zarnke, and I appreciate you offering an option. So thank you for that. Let's see, the next person is on the off-net. Al Barrett is also in Fairbanks. Mr. Barrett, welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourself for the record and your affiliation and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Al Barrett. I reside in Fairbanks, and I'm representing myself. My concerns with this bill, or my opposition to this bill, is, it has language in there that says that a leg-hold trap that has a jaw spread greater than 5 inches would be not allowed to use in that designated area. That basically eliminates what we trappers call the number 4 size trap. and my favorite active trapping senator can explain to you that it's probably the second most popular trap in Alaska that's used on the ground, only exceeded by the number one for marten set. So you're potentially making any of the subsistence users that are trapping in that area having to resupply and be less effective with smaller traps for targeting, you know, other species like coyote, lynx, and wolverine. So that's a huge hindrance and has some subsistence issues associated with that. My second concern is line 18, where it, authorizing the department or for taking wolves that present a danger for health and safety to local residents, and that's the only option. Currently, there's a lice outbreak in Mental Flats area, and the department's considering their options on how to take care of this issue with the pelt damage and this parasite that affects the animal's ability to survive and have long hair through the cold winters. You know, this this provision in this bill wouldn't authorize or wouldn't allow the department of taking of wolves in that area, and I submitted an email. It was kind of late because I just thought of it. The definition of taking includes capturing or pursuing. And so in order for the department to either eliminate some of these infected wolves so the spread doesn't continue throughout the state, it would hinder them from even treating wolves by pursuing them. And so the other comment I'd like to make is, one of the four or five collars that were retrieved this year that were taken from either trapping or hunting, one of those collars was, one of those wolves was killed by another pack. And so it was, one out of five or one out of four wolves. Again, it's not ever mentioned that the high mortality of wolf-on-wolf interaction. And I think I clearly stated and gave a really long dissertation that I submitted to you that how this implicates the subsistence users in the area. And in order for people to say you can just go over to 20A and get your wolves over there, trapping is a very individualized and secluded area. And so for me to move from my area to somebody else's area that's been trapped would, creates a lot of conflict and a lot of confusion with other trappers. And so, trappers just don't pick up their gear and go, well, I'm going to go over to this area and do my wolf trapping now. And you may impact another person's livelihood and opportunity.
Mr. Barrett, you've gone past the two-minute mark. If you could wrap up.
I think I got it, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you very much for calling in, and thank you for your testimony. I also see Mr. Bruce Dale. Of course, he's Director of the Wildlife Division at ADF&G, and Natalie Weber, the Regulation Program Coordinator. These folks are both online for any questions. Does the committee have any questions for the ADF&G employees? Senator Coghill.
Thank you. I'm not too sure who would answer this, but it was from a question that I asked earlier, and that is, the wolf population sounds like it's fairly healthy right now, but does that follow the other populations that are their prey, for example? And would this, are our numbers flow with the population of hare or moose or caribou? And if not, if it's true that one of the wolves was actually taken by another wolf pack, that may be a good reason not to have the buffer. But just the flow of that animal count, is that something they get, or do they depend upon the Park Service for that?
Thank you. So you're wondering if the pack size fluctuates with the food supply, basically. So Mr. Dale, Director Dale, or Ms. Weber, I don't care who, but would one of you like to take on that question?
For the record, Madam Chair, my name is Bruce Dale. I'm the Director of the Division of Wildlife Conservation for Fish and Game.
Welcome. Can you answer Senator Coghill's question?
Yes, I can. Thank you. Wolf density, population size, is largely a function of the availability of ungulate prey. And when wolf populations decline, it's either because prey numbers changed or increased, usually, or there's changes in the vulnerability of the prey. So that might be affected. Vulnerability to predation might be affected by snow conditions or their nutritional status, and that sort of thing. it's actually a good predictor of wolf density. So they're really obligate. They eat a lot of other things, but ungulate prey is really what determines their abundance. Except in a few areas where there's where harvest can have an effect, but mostly in Alaska, through regular hunting and trapping, harvest does not affect wolf numbers. Wolves are capable of providing for a lot of harvest because, as was mentioned earlier, dispersal and dispersing wolves is a real important life history trait for wolves. They, up to 20% of a pack can disperse every year. Wolves have a lot of pups, and when they get to be about 2 years old and about this time of year, from February on through June and July, a lot of them seek their own territories. And so those animals are all looking for places to live. There aren't always places to live. And they become vulnerable to other wolves and to trappers and hunters. And the last thing regarding the... well, I'll just leave it at that, I guess.
All right.
Was there a second part to that question?
Thank you very much, Director Dale. Senator Coghill, follow up.
The other part of that question is, in this particular zone, the wolves are managed by the park, and you have to manage them within the state. Is there overlap there? Is there cooperation there? Or is there ability to count there? So I'm just looking for how the state interacts with the park and this zone.
Through the chair, thank you. Yes, there is some overlap there. The park actually studies the wolves and monitors the wolf population. We do not do surveys on the inside Denali National Park. The Park Service has done research on wolves there for many decades. I was part of that research, and that reminded me of the other part I wanted to tell you is that the primary cause of death of wolves in Denali National Park through at least from 1987 through when that study ended in the late 90s, our part of it was, in the mid-90s, was the biggest cause of death was mortality due from being killed by other wolves.
Very good. Senator Wilikowski has a question also. Director Dale, thank you.
Thank you. I'm trying to understand the interplay in the Constitution. In my mind, this is somewhat of a everything we're driven by the Constitution, but you've got the general authority section in Article 8, which says natural resources belonging to the state are to be used for maximum benefit of the people. Then you've got common use section, which says fish, wildlife, and waters are reserved for the people for common use. How do you see the wolves? We've heard a lot of testimony about this bringing in a lot of money for the region and the state versus the other competing uses. How do you reconcile those? And what do you think is the maximum benefit for this wildlife?
Through the chair, Bruce Dale again. That's basically a policy call for the trustees of the resource, which is the legislature. And as they've succeeded, delegated that authority to the Board of Game. As the trust manager, we give you the information you need to make the decision. I know wolf viewing is very popular. It has really increased visitation in Yellowstone, I believe, which was already high, and it's high in Denali, too. The parks enjoy record visitation all over. That's up to the trustees to decide.
Follow up, Senator Wilikowski.
You're right. It's up to us. We've got an obligation to ensure the Constitution is being followed. But we do rely on our experts like you to inform us as to what the competing interests are there. And so what I've heard is the competing interests I see are we've got millions of dollars, lots of tourists, lots of money for our economy, and versus some trappers who want to trap these animals, and then I guess there's the issue of the ungulate population, maybe keeping that under control to some degree. But I mean, how do you, are you willing to offer an opinion on how you reconcile those things, those interests?
Through the chair, no, not really. I've been involved in this issue for 30 years, both working for the Park Service and for the Department of Fish and Game. And that was the Fairbanks area biologist, of which this area is included. And it's really a values call. And my expertise is in biology. And my credibility is better if I stick to the biology.
Thank you very much, Director Dale. Are there any other questions for Director Dale? Senator Coghill?
No, this will be for the sponsor.
Great. We'll get to that in just a moment. Any other questions for Director Dale or Ms. Weber, who is the Regulation Program Coordinator? All right. Seeing none, I have no other persons online wishing to testify. Is there anyone else here in the room wishing to testify on the bill? Seeing none, I'm closing public testimony. Welcome, Representative Josephson. So glad you could join us. So we have completed public testimony. Would you come forward? Would you like to offer us some comments?
Sure. Thank you.
Welcome.
First, let me, Andy Josephson of the record, House District 17, let me say that I'm very grateful that you calendared the hearing. And second, let me say that there's virtually no way I would have missed the hearing except for the fact that on the House floor moments ago and continuing, I think it's safe to say, and you can ask my colleagues, that we're at a very critical juncture, and it was imperative that I be there. I suspect, and I look forward to hearing the audio of this hearing, that much of what I would say has been said. I guess the fundamental things, sort of take-home things I'd want the committee to know are that the research on the question of who's taking wolves that leave the national park suggests that it's two or three individuals. There was an article in the National Geographic magazine 25 months ago, so February of 2016, where a gentleman named Mr. Coke Wallace, who I hold no ill will toward, I've never met him, I've never spoken to him, but he told, and this may have been a bravado for an important national magazine, he said that he has ruined the opportunity for millions of people to see wolves. And I think he's right, because when you take significant breeding females, you can really contribute to the demise of a pack. And I would note that when there was a buffer in place, put in place by the Board of Game, the numbers reflect and seem to correlate. You see over 100 wolves is the expected population count during that time. And so to me, I understand there are many variables, but to me there appears to be on the surface of it some real correlation between the viewability, which is down, it may have crept up slightly recently, but it was as high as 45%. And then when the bill was on the floor last year, we reported it was at 6%. There was no evidence to the contrary of that. But I say that Mr. Wallace may be right, because Denali gets about 650,000 visitors per year, almost the equivalent of every Alaskan going once. And so over a number of years, yeah, you're getting into the couple of million of people. There's a great, I think, economic issue here. It's true that the park entry is doing well, but the question is, could it do better? And, there's a lot of discussion about whose management responsibility is all of this, and I wish I'd been here to sort of make some points about all of that, because it's hard to sort of come in midstream or late in the hearing. But fundamentally, we know that these wolves leave to the north and to the east, and we know that only a handful of trappers are getting any benefit. That's what the evidence seems to be in this area, but that's enough to really do some damage. I would note that relative to the traps that would be prohibited under the legislation, that I spoke very carefully in crafting that with Bernard Chastain, our leading DPS officer in the state on wildlife enforcement policy. Mr. Dale and former BOG Board of Game member Vic Van Ballenberg, and there was a general consensus that those two types of traps were the kinds of traps that a wolf would come upon and its life over, and that other traps, yes, there was a conceivability that a wolf could be drawn to those traps, but really it was these larger traps that were the issue. All other trapping would continue, and I wanted to note that in correspondence with Mr. Chastain, Major Chastain, he said unequivocally that the likelihood of a prosecution where someone said, look, I've caught a wolf in a trap that is not a precluded trap, because the bill would preclude full stop the taking of wolves, would not result, or almost surely would not result, in the prosecution of an individual. So, yes, while there's this blanket prohibition, it would be essentially an affirmative defense to say it was some other trap, not one of these two prohibited traps. So that's essentially where this is. And I guess the other thing I would note is people say that this is state land and we shouldn't do this. It's absolutely state land. It's absolutely state land. This issue came up on the floor. I listened to those arguments from last May 17th again. And as I noted on the floor, if this was a surrender of state land, surely the press would have notified that to the people, and there would have been some grousing about that. This is basically a conservation easement of sorts in a discrete, narrow way relative to this wolf population. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Josephson. Questions for the representative? Senator Cuggill, you said you had a question.
Well, it's more an observation. And maybe you've thought about this and have an answer for it. It looks like most of the viewing is along the road system, and so the viewing opportunities are very limited within the park because there's only like one major road and a few pack areas. So it looks to me like what this corridor is doing is really giving the population area that is covered by roads that limitation. Have you had that discussion, and is that a accurate observation, or is there more on the park that I just don't understand?
So through the chair, I would say that if you look at the map before us, you see the road to Wonder Lake and beyond to Kantishna, and without a doubt, the economic benefit would be enjoyed by the folks at McKinley Park, where all the hoteliers and restaurants are, because they would be drawn to this area knowing that there was a return to a 46% chance of seeing a wolf, up from 6% where we are now. Maybe we're at 10 or 12%. But then clearly the wolf observing happens on the park road. So, the benefit ultimately of the viewability would occur on the park road. There are people that get permits to go into the units that are much more ambitious than the majority of folks that would see wolves on the park road. I don't know if that
follow
helps.
Follow up, Senator Cuggill?
No, it's just for me, I would probably ask the park to put more access in before I was willing to surrender some of this ground, that's all.
Thank you. Any other questions for Representative Josephson concerning his bill? Yes, Senator Wilikowski.
On the weighing of the constitutional issue, the maximum benefit for the people, the common use requirement, do you have any thoughts that could maybe guide us in that area?
Well, through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, there's a discussion about whether under predator control policies there is the constitutional goals you discuss or mandates are met. But really this isn't about that issue. It is, however, I think about those concerns when you talk about the rights of folks to see wildlife. That is certainly a topic that I embrace and that I have huge passion for. I think when you take that and you combine it with the ecological value, but then surely the economic value, I think it's imperative that we do better. I do think that the common use principle is seriously undermined when two or three individuals can capture wolves who leave in a seasonal way and undermine the health of the packs, which we know are unstable, and rely on the knowledge and intelligence of the senior members of the pack for their sort of prosperity and health. So I think that there is a constitutional feature to this. It's not sort of front and center for me. The buffer is what's front and center for me. So.
Thank you. Senator Bishop, a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Josephson, thanks for coming today. These three trappers are three people that are harvesting wolves that you're talking about. How long have they been harvesting wolves in this area? How many years?
Through the chair, they were prohibited for a time in the first decade of this century. So I think it was sort of roughly 2000 to 2010. I think that Mr. Wallace is relatively new to Alaska. I don't think he was born here. I might be wrong. It looks like I'm wrong. But
very wrong.
Okay. But I'm not sure. I guess I honestly don't know, but I'm not sure that that is dispositive of anything. In other words, I don't think that that brings us to an answer.
Oh, well, I was just...
Yeah. Senator Bishop, follow-up.
I was just looking at the population estimates inside the park in the last 26 years, and there's some good wolf numbers in there. That's all I'm saying. I was just trying to do a correlation, you know, how long these guys have been trapping or whoever, and site in... was trying to draw a correlation. Were they trapping alongside these bumper crop ears? That's all I was getting at.
I would note that, through the chair, that there is anecdotal information, the testimony in the other chamber from a Mr. Sean McGuire, and I think it's been repeated enough and not challenged, and Mr. Dale may know something about it, that there have been, for example, animals killed to draw out, and I know this is what you do typically when you're doing a baiting, that's the point, but that, for example, a large animal like a horse was killed for the purpose of drawing these wolves out. And that sort of thing, I think, concerns me. I think that, as I noted on the floor and in committee, that the folks that will show up in a month at the Juneau Harbor, many of them are going to go up through the Yukon or by other means up to Denali. It is part of a two-week trip, and those folks want to see wolves, and I think we should help them see them.
Thank you. Any other questions for Representative Josephson? Thank you so much, Representative Josephson. I appreciate you being able to step out of the very important floor session, and thank you to Mr. Atkinson also for your presentation of the bill. So with that, we are closing in on our adjournment time. I'm going to set House Bill 105 aside. That concludes our meeting for today. The next hearing will be on Monday, March 23rd, and at that time we have two confirmations to the Board of Game. So at this time, we will stand adjourned. Let the record reflect. The time is 4:51 p.m.